book in front of me to read that book.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is going to be exciting. I have Michael Shishko here from Japan, and it's 10 o'clock at night there, and it's 8 o'clock, and Fran's actually up in the morning, and this is going to be a fantastic show. I'm going to turn on my chat room, and hopefully it'll go on so that we can, you know, see who's there that's listening. And the book is called, it worked, yay. It's called Vector, Tradecraft Phase Zero. And what would happen when researcher Jawad Khatib gasped his last breath in Massachusetts General Hospital floor? The Department of Homeland Security wants answers. They think it's radiation poisoning, but actually, what was he working on? Well, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to find out if only if you read the book. And we've got two phenomenal characters, DHS agent Lee Jensen and toxicologist, I really like this toxicologist, Dr. Emma Hess. And I'm going to say good morning to listeners and good evening to Michael. How are you?
I'm good. Good evening, and thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you for doing this at 10 o'clock at night. I was trying to figure out how I could come up with a time that would work for both of us. And I did, but too late, no. I said, gee, if it's 6 o'clock here, it's 8 o'clock in the morning there. So this is a novel on a lot of science and research into genetics and DNA. How did you decide to create this novel and choose those particular topics of genetics and a bioweapon that could take out a whole bunch of people and an ethnic group? That's what really got me.
Well, yeah, I've always been fascinated by the brain and the human genome. I think it's because we just know so much about them, but at the same time, there's so much more to learn. You know, there's about 200,000 human protein genes that we know of, but that's only about 1 or 2% of the total human genome. We just don't have a good handle of what the rest does. So I think my interest in that area of medicine kind of collided with my background in the Middle East and foreign affairs, and Vector was born.
Wow, that is interesting. And we have guests in the chat room, too. This is even better. So creating fear, you know, if you listen to the news in America, you know that's not that hard. Creating fear in the minds of the public, which is scary, is something that terrorists prey on and take pride in. So how does this theme come through in your novel? Because it works very well. I mean, just the slightest thing scares people, unfortunately. And then they take to the streets and they become mob vigilantes, so it makes it even worse. So how does that play in this book, that these terrorists are creating fear?
Yeah, the antagonist in Vector kind of used our own prejudices and fears against us. You know, the architect, who's kind of like the main bad guy, he manipulated the emotions that kind of stir Americans when bad things happen, especially if Middle Easterners are involved. So it's kind of like how we can easily be misled by stereotypes, and that's kind of how the bad guys, you know, use that fear to pursue their own goals. But you know, Emma and Lee, they had to overcome these initial misleading ideas to persevere to find the truth. So it's kind of how they kind of use the fear that grips us every day kind of against us.
It's scary. It's in the news every single day. And if you listen to some of the political conversations here, some of the people that are supposed to be on our side are kind of scary, too. That's even worse.
Well, it is. And it's the fear and the misleading thoughts and ideas. And I guess, and even Emma and Lee had to get past that and just focus on the facts, you know, and kind of like what we have to do, just kind of focus on the facts and not you know, fall prey to the fear and stereotypes.
That's very, very true, because there's a lot of stereotyping out there. And with this new travel ban, it makes it even worse, you know, over here. So that's even scarier. Because what do you do about the people that are already here that have false IDs? I mean, you can have all the travel bans in the world, but that doesn't mean that no one's going to get through, which is even scarier. So tell us about Emma Hess. And why she is a valued toxicologist, and tell us about the first case you presented at the start of the novel. That was scary.
Well, the case, and it's very realistic as well. You know, the case involved a young girl, a 3-year-old, Alicia Washington, who she basically was dying in the ICU, and nobody can figure out what was going on with her. So they called Emma Hess, who had a very strong reputation in Mass General and actually in the region for her knowledge of toxicology and poison, to kind of see if she can shed any light into what's going on to this little girl. And through her investigative skills, which in medicine, that's all it is, it's kind of like being a police officer. You get little clues, and you try to, you can't see what's inside the body many times, so you just have to get little clues and paint a picture and put the puzzles together. And that's kind of where Emma's so good at. She's so good at connecting these dots and putting these pieces of puzzle together. And when she saw that picture of little Alicia wearing the bracelet, she kind of figured out what was going on. And she, you know, she wasn't being poisoned maliciously. It was kind of unintentional, and she was able to figure out what the toxin was. So that whole story just kind of presents an illustration of how complex toxicology is. And I'll tell you, some of the most brilliant physicians I've ever worked with were toxicologists. There are just so many environmental hazards out there, and they just have to know so much, and the consequences are life or death, really. And, you know, Emma is a brilliant physician, and she's obviously truly passionate about what she does, and passionate about keeping her patients safe. And that tenacity is really what made her so famous. And it was contagious. You know, Agent Lee Jensen wasn't as enthused about the case until he started working with her. And it's that intelligence and that tenacity that she has that kept the case going.
Well, he decided to work with her, which I found really great, because instead of resenting the fact that she was there, he sort of embraced the help. And he was glad that she was there to help him. So tell us a little bit about him and his background. How did you create him?
He's kind of a mixture of a lot of people I know, including partially myself. But yeah, he was a good DHS agent once, but yeah, he took the life of the loss of his wife hard. Maybe a little harder than most because of his experience with death while a Marine in Iraq. You know, while he's in Iraq, and even as a DHS agent, the loss of life all around him kind of became personal. He wanted to save them, but he wasn't always able to do so, and that kind of weighed very heavily upon him. And he felt powerless to save his wife, and that just kind of pushed him to the edge. He was able to kind of throw himself into his work, but he was reckless after that because he felt he couldn't save people the way he felt he wanted to or should as a law enforcement officer, as a Marine. So his adversaries, though, they saw that weakness, him being at the brink, kind of to their advantage. And that's kind of ultimately why they sent him up to Boston. They just thought he was kind of washed up and he wouldn't put his heart into truly finding out what was going on. And, you know, they were right initially, but like you mentioned, teaming him up with Emma really kind of turned him out of the dark, you know, pulled him out of the darkness that he was in.
Well, he didn't. I think when they paired him up, I don't think they really wanted him to find out too much about what really happened. That's the scary part. That's the scary part about it. Sometimes they send somebody there just to get the case closed, and they don't really want to know what really happened because there's underlying things that we don't know about. So.
And that's exactly the case here. I mean, he was truly sent up there to kind of just gloss over and shut the case. But unbeknownst to them, Emma was already kind of activated on the case through the public health side of the house, so they were facing the dynamic duo there, and they weren't anticipating that.
Well, what happens when they find this guy, Jawad Khatib, they find out he started this chain of events? What was he working on, and what did they think killed him? And that's what's really amazing.
So he was a microbiologist that worked at a private research institute, which is not uncommon. But what was unique was he was hired, or his firm was hired by the order or by the bad guys to help develop the science that would eventually become the weapon. But they did something quite smart. You know, they they were able to parcel out different parts of the science to different labs to kind of keep it quiet. If all these scientists, unbeknownst to them, were working on different parts of the project that in itself were benign, but if you put all the research together, you could see that it could be a very dangerous tool. So he wasn't aware that that's what the science was going to be used for. As a matter of fact, he thought it was going to be for something good, to help cure diseases. But he started kind of figuring it out, and that's kind of what ended up getting him killed, actually. And they certainly tried to... That started the chain reaction, as we talked about, and him being in Mass General kind of got more people involved, kind of got his death, you know, as an Arab, as a death under suspicious circumstances. That kind of triggered Homeland Security to get involved, it triggered the public health to get involved, and that was something that the bad guys didn't anticipate at all, because they didn't anticipate that he would die. So
that is scary. It is scary. Because I kept saying, when are they going to realize it? But she realized it right away. And she realized that it was, with all the tests, the cultures, the scans, the blood work, and the thorough autopsy, that there were anomalies and nuances that didn't add up. And she realized that, and they kept saying, and the head of DHS kept saying, it was a dirty bomb. But in her heart, she knew it was not a dirty bomb. So when did they realize it was not radiation poisoning? And Emma realizes that they need to take that out of the equation. And they had help from the ER's resident, Manny Ortiz, who's very well versed in this. So how did they come to work together to make them realize that this is more than you think it is? It's not the same thing. It's not a dirty bomb.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about early. You know, it was easy for people to just believe that an Arab would be working on a dirty bomb, and that's kind of what the order was hoping everybody would believe. But Emma was not being fooled by that, and she was able to convince Lee that they had to, you know, look at the evidence. You know, forget about whatever everybody's saying, forget about what you're thinking, forget about the stereotypes, and let's focus on the evidence. Let's focus on the science. And just that it wasn't adding up. The labs, as you mentioned, it didn't look like radiation poisoning. And don't forget, Lee was also an expert in weaponry, especially radiologic and nuclear and biologic weapons. He was an EOD expert. So he had a lot of experience with this. So between the two of them, they were able to see these small inconsistencies that the order was hoping people would just kind of gloss over. And then with Manny, who is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, mine too.
He was able to you know, use his experience in the military as well, and just his uncanny ability to sniff out something that just didn't seem right, you know. So between all of them, they were able to put these little pieces of the puzzle together that weren't making sense, and then prompted them to keep looking into it, and then they found more clues that led to the truth.
Well, the scary part is also when they went to ask Dr. Adams to look at the body, he wouldn't let them. And he said that they couldn't see the body, and then even though they were doing wanted to examine it, he wouldn't let them. So you already feel that he's got something to hide also. And that's even scarier. So explain the title, Vector, and explain, I know that there's a definition in math, but in this particular case, it's the virus. So how would you explain that to people that don't understand that the vector or an insect or other organism, how it transmits a disease?
So a vector is a tool or a mechanism for a disease or even a cure for a biologic process to transmit. And a lot of vectors are viruses, and they transmit diseases in nature from one animal to another animal. Swine flu develops in a pig and gets bit by a mosquito, and then that mosquito transmits. It's a vector, and it transmits the disease to another host, like a human. So the whole science behind this bioweapon was to develop a vector that can transmit this bioweapon to human to humans. And vectors, especially viral vectors, are very unique, and we use them in treatment because you can actually put a treatment into a virus, and it can insert that treatment into a human's gene to cure a disease.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's pretty fascinating. So likewise, they can put this disease or weapon into a virus and put into a host DNA and kill someone. It's very real science. There's so much good that can come out of genetic therapy, but we just have to be careful about how it's used.
That is scary.
And
you often wonder sometimes.
The
people,
other part of
that is scary, really scary.
Yeah. The other part of the title actually is the tradecraft is a term that's used in the intelligence world for how we gather intelligence. It literally means how do you gather intelligence? It's the tools you use.
Mm.
And this is the first of a series of five books that have an underlining theme that weaves through the six books. Basically how Steve Connors, who comes out in this book later on, will weave through these different stories that are all put together through anti-terrorism. And so.
Well, I can't read the rest of them. I can't wait to read the rest of them. I can't wait to read the next one to see where you're going with this, because I received this and I received the request for review, and I'm saying, okay, I'm not sure, and I just picked it up and I couldn't stop reading it. Which is definitely not like, which is like me. And if a book takes me like this one did, like two and a half hours a week, because I took my time to go through the science, usually takes me less. I'm going like, I have to interview this author because this is too good to be true. And this is like, everybody's got to read this, especially with what's going on in the news. So when Lee and Emma come face to face with someone that looks just like Jawad, and they're looking into his apartment, when did they realize that there's more to this than meets the eye? Because who was this other person? That's even scarier.
Yeah, so, Ashraf is Jawad's brother, and obviously just being a brother, he bears a strong resemblance to his brother. But, you can imagine Emma and Lee in Jawad's apartment looking for clues, and then and they see someone that resembles from the pictures they saw in Jawad's file, because they never met Jawad. They just saw his file with his passport picture and his college picture. So they saw him, and, the case was already starting to look, a little funny to them, and now all of a sudden they see someone that looks just like Jawad. So it just, they weren't sure who it was, and likewise, Ashraf didn't know who they were. Ashraf didn't know what happened to his brother. His brother died of mysterious circumstances and didn't know who these people were in his apartment, and he was trying to figure out what was going on as well. So really nobody knew who to trust. It was only that he realized who Emma was by following her back to her apartment, or excuse me, her office, and she is pretty well known, that he was able to decide to trust her and approach her to get help. And that's why he ran away, because he wasn't sure who they were in their apartment in the first place.
This is like a whole bunch of one event that sent a whole bunch of spiraling events that are dangerous. So they go and they want to examine the body, and they blow up the lab. That was really like, whoa. I did not expect that. They blow up the lab, and this way no one could examine the body. So how did they manage to get something done through Su Chin? Who is she?
Su Chin is a very timid but very smart microbiologist that works in the lab, and she was the one that was kind of gathering the forensic evidence on what happened to Jawad Khatib, and she was one of the first people that gave Lee and Emma any clue that this was maybe not radiation poisoning, just from some of the labs that she was analyzing. And so she became part of their small team between them two and Manny and Sue in trying to figure out what happened. You mentioned Dr. Adams earlier.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. I, 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 at first I was going to, I decided to let the readers decide if he was part of the order or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that on purpose because the point was the order could be anybody. It could be your neighbor, it could be your friends, it could be your coworkers. It's anybody and everybody all around you, or it could be anybody. So that's why I kind of left his fate a little bit up in the air, kind of more for the reader to decide. But the point was to get the evidence destroyed, to get the body destroyed, all the labs that Sue was working on, get all the samples destroyed through a fire, through the explosion. And at the same time, by the way, if it happened to kill the pesky team of Emma and Lee and and Sue and Manny, well, that would just be good for the order as well. So that's kind of why they really want to get that the lab blown up.
Well, they wanted a lot more than that. They go after everybody. So this DNA and RNA, and how are vectors related to both of them?
So the how vectors work is even in nature, if a mosquito, for example, as a vector, they'll carry the treatment or the disease, but then when they bite somebody, they insert that into the body, and a lot of the viruses that are present nowadays actually go into our DNA and actually insert into parts of our DNA. As I mentioned, only 1-2% of our DNA we really know what it's used for. Mm-hmm. A lot of it might be old viruses that have incorporated into our DNA and may not have any purpose anymore. So the vectors are a way or a tool to get material into our DNA. And once it's in our DNA, it's permanent. It will produce its effect forever. So whether that effect is a treatment to cure a disease like diabetes that you've had your whole life, if you're able to get a vector to put a molecule in your DNA that will make that go away or produce a treatment for it, then you're cured. You have it the rest of your life. Or likewise, it can be a damaging agent that can create a disease any disease. You can, like diabetes, for example.
Before I ask about something that happened to Lee and Emma, we have to bring in a few other characters that are there. So first of all, we have the Order, and we have the Architect. He's crazy. Hearing the voices of the ten, the reader learns that there are many powerful people in the group, that some will fall and others might still be out there. So how did you decide which members to get rid of, and how did you decide which members, well, we'll see what happens to them. I'm not going to say if they get away with it. And then there are two other characters that we must bring out afterwards. How did you decide who will live and who will die? That's so good.
Well, the main decision point was which ones would be important for the rest of the story and for the survival of the order. So those obviously had to survive to continue with the story and continue with the order and the project. Mm. But also, there had to be some that I won't mention who they were, but there are some that we wanted to make sure hit close to home. And those I wanted to be captured, so we can start putting pieces together as the story unfolds. Lee and Emma can start putting the pieces together of who the order is. And by having some of these characters captured, they can do, they can work with Interpol to find some of these international characters, who they are. They can see the depth and the scope of how penetrating the order is, because now they have some of these people in captivity. Does that make sense?
Well, we have to bring up the fact that Lee was working not only on this case, but he was working on the fact that his partner T-Bone was killed at the beginning of the book. So he's angry about that. And why was T-Bone killed? And just what role does Adolf Agile and his brother play in that particular case? So you're bringing in somebody with weapons and stuff like that too. So how does that come into this whole thing?
There are two main arcs to that. first, what happened to T-Bone was the impetus for DHS, for the order that it was the excuse for them to send Lee up to Boston. He's torn up over what happened to T-Bone, who is his partner, is his friend, who he also couldn't save. And he's truly, his mind is back in D.C. trying to figure out what happened to T-Bone. He didn't want to be in Boston. He didn't want to deal with this case that was seemed like an open and shut case from an Arab terrorist. So that was the perfect thing for the order to send him up there, because then his mind wouldn't be on the case. But likewise, it ties two other ways. One, it ties into the series, the whole book, the whole series of the Tradecraft series. The United Islamic Caliphate, who the Ajil brothers were part of, they are the terrorist group that is prominent throughout the series. And they were involved, I don't know how much we should say about the book, but they have something to do with what the order was trying to create as well. So there is tie-in with this book as well as with the other books.
I can't wait to read the second book. This is the second one? This is the first one?
This is the first one. The second one comes out in April.
Oh, well, I've got to get it then, please. I've got a books up to the ceiling inside to read. Well, definitely I have to read. I have to get the second one to see, you know, to see where it goes. Definitely happen. I mean, without a doubt. And I have to know more about it afterwards. That is amazing. So Emma's considered an authority in her field. So why do they go after her too? They're unbelievable, but they go after her. And they go after Lee. So how come they go after her? What are they hoping to accomplish? To stop her?
Yeah. So she, as the architect says towards the end of the book, I mean, her mind is just so brilliant. She is just so good at what she does. She is both a liability because they know she won't stop. She's very famous for being, you know, going after the government for environmental hazards and waste. She will not stop. She will pursue the safety of her patients at all costs. She will continue. She will not stop. So that's a threat to the order, as is her brilliance. But on the same time, if they can woo her over to their side, that would be an incredible ally. I mean, her brain is so smart. She would be an incredible ally to the order, and she could truly make a huge impact in their plan for the world. So they're after her on two fronts. One, because she's a threat, and two, to try to get her, to win her over to their side.
You know what's even scarier is that they get to Lee. Lee's in the hospital after whatever happens, and they find a way to get the antidote to help him, but when meeting with the architect, he fools them. And how do they not see what he's really doing, and that he really didn't want to help Lee, he really wants him dead? That's even scarier.
At this point, they've all become kind of emotionally attached to Lee. Certainly Emma has. And you know, her focus has almost shifted a little bit. She just wanted the short term. She wanted to get Lee was dying. Lee was dying. He was already coded. He was dying, and she saw what happened to Jawad, and she saw that it was going to happen to Lee, and time was running out. So on the short term, she just wanted to save his life, and she was willing to believe anything. Any chance to save him. He was convincing. The architect was convincing in his ruse with her. And at the same time, it bought him time. He knew he couldn't stop Lee and Emma, and things were just getting too difficult for him to continue what he was doing here in the States. He knew he needed time to get to a safer place where he can continue his work. So he knew this would buy time. If Emma can focus on trying to save Lee with this quote-unquote antidote, it would get basically her off of his back for a little time.
Well, this person, architect, had a plan to get rid of not his people, but one race of people. It was almost like Hitler's Germany. And he decided that he was going to get rid of a whole race of people. And that's what's really scary. That's what really comes through in the book. So he misdirects Emma and Lee so that he could take care of what he wants to do. We know it's not a dirty bomb, and they, in their heads, they didn't really believe him. Why did he want to get rid of a whole race of people? What was his point?
He was so focused on the supremacy of his particular group that mm-hmm. he wanted to reclaim what he believed was the rightful place of he and his group in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He felt his group was wrong. He felt his group was the land of his group was stolen, and he felt it was his duty to reclaim it and reclaim their power and prestige in the world as it once was. What's interesting is his story mm-hmm. was not much unlike many of the other 10. The other members of the leadership of the order, they each had their own plans for the weapon. They had their own ethnic problems in their mind that they wanted to deal with in their own countries. And it's basically ethnic, they wanted their groups to continue at the expense of others, and they wanted to use this weapon to achieve those goals. But they're just so focused on it, and they believe themselves to be above and that they're right.
They actually convince themselves, but then you've got people today in terrorist groups that actually think that they're right, too. And if everybody thinks they're right and doesn't listen to anybody else's side, then this is scarier. So we've got Undersecretary Waters that sent Lee to take care of this, and he's like a dictator or a teacher that says, just follow the rules. And every time he goes to do something else, he tells him, you're going to be sorry, I'm going to send you somewhere else. And why does he dismiss him? And he doesn't really want him to handle it. He just tells him, follow the rules, how come? When Lee realizes something, he tells him, just do what I tell you to do.
Right. So he's kind of a product. You know, he is close to retirement. He's under a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. You know, Boston has been through a lot these past several years. And he's getting pressure from the mayor, from his constituents, from the media, to find out what this is. And, you know, there are a lot of pressures on him just to solve this. And sometimes people take the path of least resistance. You know, it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck. Well, you know, if it's an Arab that looks like a terrorist and somebody says there's a dirty bomb involved, it's just easier to pursue that path instead of looking for the truth. So I think Undersecretary Waters was just a victim of his own, of the environment that he lived in and some of the prejudices that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And, he was just kind of focused on surviving, if you will, and didn't have the ability to, he was racing against time. And if, God forbid, a dirty bomb went off in Boston on his watch while he was off, chasing the unicorns that Emma and Lee, that he thought Emma and Lee were chasing. You know what I mean?
That's scary. So Lee realizes that his attitude is going to hurt the investigation. And he gets the feeling that he doesn't really want to solve the problem. He's just settling for whatever he thinks it is, a dirty bomb or radiation poisoning or whatever. So who makes a phone call that changes it all? And what happens when Lee realizes that there's someone close to them, but we don't say who, that can't be trusted?
So, part of what's coming out as they're continuing to investigate, even though Undersecretary Waters tells them to stop, and even Lee, in the beginning, doesn't know why Emma keeps trying to pursue leads that are not the obvious radiation poisoning, Lee starts seeing that as well. He starts seeing that there might be an association between what happened to T-Bone and maybe the terrorists down there in D.C. and what was going on in Boston. So, he's already reinvigorated on this case because of Emma's enthusiasm and excitement for trying to solve the case. But now it's a little bit more real for him now, too. Maybe this is related to T-Bone's killer. And maybe there is something that's, tying these two cases together. And also, part of the investigation, it was going pretty fast. They were being fed all this false information from Department of Homeland Security, from Undersecretary Waters, Dr. Adams. So they were getting all this information about Khatib being an Egyptian terrorist, about him being, stuff being planted in his apartment, about stuff in his office. So they were it was all coming so fast. So where was all this coming from? Where was this misinformation? Once they started seeing that, well, he didn't die from radiation poisoning, well, then where's all this information coming from? So is it coming from DHS? Is there somebody, a traitor within the MIT, if you will? So that's when they started getting more suspicious and now worried that this is maybe a lot larger scheme than they had initially thought.
Well, every government, and we can't tell them that they don't, has moles and traitors and people that appear to be on our side but are really not. And this goes all the way to Lebanon and everything. This is what's scary because it goes all over the world, this story. So who is Dr. Singh, and why did they bother to investigate him?
I'm sorry, who is who?
Dr. Singh, S-I-N-G-H, Singh, yeah.
Yep. Right. So, he, a lot of what he was trying to say about Khatib, he was leading them down the path just as information they were getting from other sources were leading them down a certain path. And as they started realizing that path was not, evidence didn't support that path, that's when they started to look at some of the other people that are misleading them. And Singh was really right at the verge of that, being Khatib's boss. And then, some of Singh's past history came out. Sue Chen knew a little bit about Singh and his unscrupulous research activities in the past. So as they kept pursuing this case, they were able to see that he may not have been, as clean as they thought initially.
Well, before I forget, I don't want to forget. Let me just announce, this show is amazing, and this book is fantastic. On Thursday, I'm doing a panel show with the author of Rambo, David Morrell, the creator of Rambo, Andrew Gross, and John Landon. We're going to talk about mood and tone in novels, and narration, voice, and whatever literary elements. On the 21st, we have New York Times author Stephen Manchester and Ashes. On the 23rd, I have an author from, I hope it works out, Scotland, the author of The Riverman. And on the 28th, the author of Lucidity. And on 3/2, the author of Cat and Flock. And this is really exciting because my show is booked until the end of June. And I've got some really great books and some fantastic authors. And I can't wait to read the second one and this one. So when you're working with so many terrorists and government agencies, like in Lebanon, how do you decide, how does someone that's working with these people find who to trust? And tell us about the government of Lebanon and why there doesn't seem to be any peace in the future.
I think we have a lot of people, and as you mentioned, it's not just Lebanon, it's all over the world.
Yeah, it's everywhere,
They're so focused, they're less willing to just sit and listen and talk to each other and work with each other. I read a book by Tom Clancy, and he was in the book. It was amazing because a Jerusalem was created where, the Muslims and the Jewish leaders and Muslim leaders and Christian leaders basically were all in Jerusalem, and it was more of a united international city, and it was peaceful. And they would sit together in restaurants and talk, and they would all, enjoy the camaraderie together of discussing the ideology and debating in a peaceful way. And I just don't think that happens as much as we'd like it to. And in Lebanon, there are so many, as there is in Syria and many parts of the world, there are just so many strong ideologic groups that that you know are not willing to sit and talk to each other, but more willing to, as the architect, create destruction to further their own goals above anybody else, almost like their goals are nobody's goals, instead of working with people and negotiating and compromising, it's all or nothing. And I just happened to pick Lebanon in this story, but it could be many, many places in the world. And, of course, there are many good people in Lebanon and good government officials, and it was just a backdrop where there are a lot of, unfortunately, strongly opinionated groups that are fighting against each other and, unfortunately, really hurting the country.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of people, you're right, that are out there that just think I'm right and you're wrong, and they don't listen to the other side of the coin. And they're just so one-sided that they're so brainwashed that this is how I believe, and if you don't believe what I am, then you have to be dead. I have to take care of you. They have to just take over, and that's what's scary. So as we learn more about the architect and his childhood and his past, why would what he was doing take on the favor of a pure revenge? He's
well,
a good character to bring back, I have to tell you.
Yeah, he it was very, very personal to him. Not only were his people and his group wronged in his eyes for centuries and robbed of their land and their power and prestige, but he was actually, you know, he grew up in that society and he was not treated very well. And that had a very strong impression on him. He was treated poorly by those that he eventually wanted to exterminate. So it was very personal to him, and you know, he, as you mentioned, he wasn't the sanest of people, so he wasn't able to filter that, and that personal grief turned into revenge, and he almost used his public ideology and that of his people to further his own personal revenge, or almost justify his own personal revenge against those that had wronged him.
Well, that is so true. And a lot of people are like that. The issues brought to light are moral ethics when dealing with DNA, RNA, and medical procedures, revenge, retribution, hate, and terrorism. That's just a couple that I figured out. How do you incorporate all of that in the plot so that readers can follow it, which I did, by the way, which is fantastic. And what other research did you have to do before you decided to write this particular novel?
I think this novel is very unique. Even in my series of the six books, which I have most of them written, and they all have ethical themes to them, different ethical themes. But this one's unique because this one was able to tie in medical, terrorism, Middle East, along with a little bit of military, paramilitary, as well as research. So it was able to kind of pull all of that together. And I did have to do research. My background is family medicine, but also occupational environmental medicine. I most certainly had to do my own research on this as well, just to make sure that I was discussing the most up to date research and the ethical dilemmas that are involved with this type of therapy. As I mentioned, this therapy, the Human Genome Project is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's a great project where they map out the human DNA, and that can and is being used for an incredible amount of good and cancer treatments and therapies. But, you know, there are bad people in the world, and, you know, a lot of medical science as well as technology can be used for evil, and we just have to kind of keep our eye on things. And then, you know, so after I researched it, yes, I had to run it by a lot of people that weren't doctors, that weren't researchers, to make sure I explain things so that, you know, people that didn't deal with it every day would be able to follow it.
Oh, I could follow it, but no problem. The one thing I'm lucky about is that everybody tells me I always get what the book is about, that I don't miss it. But I usually make sure that if I'm not sure, and if I don't understand, like I looked up vector, that's how I knew it was a virus. I looked up a couple of the terms so that I would understand it when I read it and when I was speaking with you, because a lot of people just read the book and say, okay, that was really good. No, I actually read it. I'm going to post my review after the show, and I hope the review lets people read it, because I posted about, I don't even know how many sites. So what's interesting is the title. Tell our listeners how you came up with the title Vector Tradecraft Phase Zero, and that symbol on the front, that's the symbol of a vector. And I looked that up too. And I said, that's what made it come to life, plus the fact that the vector is lying over the city, which lets you know that it may take over. So how did you decide on the cover, and how did you decide on the title?
The title, so I want to tie the six books together, which is where the tradecraft part came from. And then I like the single word title of this book being just vector, because there are so many connotations and definitions of the word vector. And there are really a couple of different meanings even in the story, because, you know, vector can be used as a media to transmit disease and, treatments, as we also mentioned, but it's also a path. It's a vector. You know, the architect, he had a vector. He had something, that an arrow, a path that he was going on that nobody was going to stop him. Lee and Emma, they were on a vector. They were not going to stop. The truth was their vector, and they weren't going to stop until they saw it to the very end. So there's kind of many meanings, and just I just really like the single term vector for this because of the duality of all of the meanings for it. And then, you know, the cover, I kind of had an idea about the bio hazard symbol that's on there. But truly, I have really good people that work with me. We have cover designers. Lee Camp, who you know, is our she's my production specialist. She's incredible, production manager. She does everything. They helped me out a lot and had a lot of designs for me, and so I'm just very fortunate to be able to have them on board, because they truly designed it. I gave them some thoughts, and, you know, certainly with Boston in the background, and they just did an incredible job.
Well, there are a lot of more characters, but I don't want to bring out too many more because I don't want to give away any more. This book was mind-boggling, and the end result of the two brothers, that's even scarier as to what happens to all of them. But Manny plays an integral part, doesn't he, in helping to solve this case too. And at times he's told not, you know, to butt in also. That's even scarier. But he's so knowledgeable that when you bring back, when you do the next book, are you going to bring back Emma and Lee and Manny? Are these characters coming back again?
They are. You know, that was a kind of a dilemma I had. You know, a lot of books of a series tend to have the same characters, in my view, and they just go into a new plot. Well, these characters weave in and out of the different six books of the series. Interestingly enough, Steve Connors is kind of the glue that kind of keeps all the books together. They are coming back. The second book doesn't have as many of these characters from this book, but they will be back in the third and some of the other ones. So they are not going away.
Well, that sometimes works
if I tried to kill off Manny, I think my production manager would kill me off.
Well, I can understand that, because a lot of times the main character gets stagnant, and then all of a sudden you say, well, you know, it gets to be boring after a while. Well, what is he going to do next? And then, of course, I've asked many authors, are you going to ever kill off the main character? And I'll tell, if you do, how am I going to read the next book? And some of them actually kill off their main characters, which is even scarier. Well, they'll kill off an integral character or a secondary character that everybody likes. So where am I here?
Yeah. So,
you said the next book is coming back in April. So what would you kill off Steve Connors? Would you kill off Lee? Would you kill off Emma? Seriously?
No.
Oh, good. Thank God.
No, I mean they're around. But my focus is more on the story and the series. That's kind of, it's more of that than the individual characters. But they are not being killed off, and they will certainly be integral parts of the subsequent books. And there'll be new characters that will be just like Emma and Lee that will continue on in the other books. You know, it's like life. You know, there aren't three people that save the world all the time. You know, there are good people everywhere, and they team together, and then they move on, and other people come in that are just as good and take their place. And it takes truly a huge, it takes everybody's effort to continue the progress that's done. And so those people, you know, in the military, we see it all the time. You move so frequently, and the people in the next place you move, you get just as great people as the people you left. So it's kind of like that, these six books. There'll be people coming in and out that are just as great.
What is the next one going to be about before we end? What's the title of the next one that I'm going to get? I can't wait to read it already. And certain people, I put the books at the top of the pile in there that I've read. Vector, that the next one goes at the top of my pile for sure.
Well, thanks. It's Shifting Sands, you know, Tradecraft Phase 1. And Steve is in it, and it's more of a military espionage book. It does have a little bit of medical in there, but the plot is not medical. It's more around nuclear proliferation. So this one was more about, obviously, the medical and moral ethics of medical research. That one's going to be more about nuclear proliferation and some espionage and military. So it's more of a lot more military involvement in it, but there's also a lot of espionage as well.
So you're going to use your military experience in the next one, is that right? You can use
your
own military experience. That should make it even more interesting. I'm going to have to set up a panel show for different people that write medical thrillers and use military experience in their writing. And I've got a whole bunch of people that work in counterintelligence, FBI and stuff. I'm going to have to put something together and make them get up in the morning at 8 o'clock to do this with me. And you never know. What they're going to actually, if I did it at 6 o'clock at night here, it would be 8 o'clock in the morning there. So that might work too. You never know. So
anything works for me. I'm pretty good.
Oh, good. Because I usually don't, I get up early in the morning. My husband goes to work very early. So I got up early this morning and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to log on to Blog Talk Radio. And then the server was down and I'm saying, oh my God, I sat there for an hour just making sure that I can log on to the show. And then the little snag with my telephone didn't help either. But before I forget, I promised my nephew, Robert Miller is running for Coconut Creek City Commissioner, and he's working on development, overcrowded classrooms, and first responders, and he'll be speaking to all these groups before the election on March 14th. And those of you in the Coconut Creek area that want to change for the better, that you want your community to have someone that's going to deal with your best interests, vote for Robert Miller. He's the second candidate in there, and I promised him I would do that. And I'm really excited because I really think he deserves to win. So where can everyone learn more about you and your work? And I can't wait to read the next one. Seriously.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for, again, allowing me to do this. Well, so I have a website, you know, michaelshusko.com, and we have a blog there. And it talks about this book and my new book's coming out, and we have a lot of promotions on there for we have actually a promotion now for Amazon gift card that we're giving away for as a promotion. It's all on the blog. So michaelshusko.com, that's kind of where you can kind of keep an idea of what I'm up to.
That is great. I think your publicist, and you sent me the link to the giveaway. I'm going to put it on my Facebook wall with my with the review. So I'm not sure how Amazon feels about that. You can't put that on with the review because they won't like it. They don't like a lot of things too, which is really sad. And I'm going to post the review on my WordPress thing, and I will send a copy to everybody as soon as I reread it and make sure that it says exactly what I wanted to say. But I want to thank you so very much. I would like to tell you that I do have an online magazine. It's on Amazon. It came out. I'm so excited. It came out yesterday. MJ9 came out, and it's for readers, writers, authors. So if you have any writing tips or articles that you want to contribute, I'm doing the next one in May or June for MJ10. MJ stands for my sister who died, Marcia Joyce. It's in her memory. She conned me into becoming a reviewer and talk show host. It's a whole other thing. She dared me. And it's in her memory that I created MJ9 and MJ Network, which is the network on Blog Talk Radio, after her. And so if you have any writing tips or articles about military, anything, speak out articles, writing tips, anything that deals with publishing, anything, any issues that you want brought to light, feel free to send them to me, because I will put them in the magazine, and I'm going to put your book in the next edition of the magazine, Invector. I will put that in there, MJ,
oh,
so
you
I
so
can
much,
feature man. It. Yeah, I thought I did it this one. I have to check it out. I'm not sure. I don't think I did. But I can. I will. What I will do is I will email you a copy of the magazine so you can read it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's a big project. It takes me a couple of months to do it. And for those of you that don't know, my next book, Faces 5, told from the point of view of the dead body behind the tombstone that did something wrong, I hope it comes out in March or April, as soon as Fran finishes getting it edited and deciding who she's going to kill off that did something wrong. I write it from the point of view of somebody that did something wrong to somebody else. They're telling the story about how they got behind the gravestone, how they died. It's unique. It's different. And it's going to be called Faces 5, Revenge and Retribution. Hidden Truths and Lies is doing very well on Amazon. And for those of you that don't know, tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And to me, what better way to celebrate Valentine's Day than to go to a bookstore, get about 20 books, put it in a basket with chocolate and flowers, and hand it to someone that loves to read. And I would start with Vector. You should just, you know, keep ordering these books, and Valentine's Day should be every day. And the best way to get it, the best way to sit on a cold day like today in the snow is to stand and read a good book. So, Michael, thank you so very much for this. I really appreciate it. This has been great. And I hope to do it again for your next book. Seriously.
Well, thank you so much, Fran. I appreciate it. And I would love to talk to you again and be on your show. It's been my honor.
Yes, I can't wait to get it. As a matter of fact, my cousin is emailing me right now, and she wants this book. She's getting it next, to be very honest. They don't last very long in my hand. And once I have a 5-star book in my hand, we know, you know, I'm in trouble because everybody wants it. So thank you so much. Everyone, stay warm. The sun is shining, and it's going to snow tomorrow again, which really is not very good. Have a great day, and I'm going to hang up, and bye. Michael, you too. Stay warm. Bye.
Thanks so much. Take care.